an internet firearms expert or a keyboard commando,
then please keep the hell out.
If you're serious about talking everything gun culture, then get ready. Load up that clip with those shells and put them into that fully semi-automatic assault rifle with the shoulder attachment thingy. This is the Armed Citizen Podcast, live.
What is going on, my Ghost Squad? Welcome to the Armed Citizen Podcast live. This is episode 99, which is crazy to think that next week will be episode 100. Not that anyone cares, but that's just something for me. I never thought that I would ever get to that point. So this is going to be a fun one tonight. We are streaming, as always, on YouTube and simulcasting, as always, over on gunchannels.com. And I've been trying to get people to get to Gun Channels forever. And if you're not there by now, I really can't help you. But basically, if you're not aware what Gun Channels is, it's a community focused on firearms, built for shooters, by shooters, for conversations like this one. So come on over to gunchannels.com, and the water's always warm. So we're going to talk with some guests tonight, some good friends of ours. First of all, we've got Fabio himself. We've got Michael Cedini. Mike, you thought that you were going to, a couple months ago, you made a decision. You thought that your life was getting ready to get easier, but why don't you tell everybody what's been going on lately for you?
Thank you. And thanks for that intro. And Fabio is probably pissed.
I've seen some of your modeling pictures.
Is Fabio even still alive? That's what I'm wondering.
I don't know, but I'll take Fabio money any day. I think he did okay. Right. I thought that, you know, I'd take some time to relax, but I think I'm so used to running Eagle Imports, and now I wake up every day and it's like I have to stay motivated, but I have so much stuff to do, so I'm just kind of in that weird space. But it's like Avidity, Walk Talk America, all these other things, and it's not that I need the motivation to be paid, but it's for once in my life I'm just kind of like, I'm just there, you know what I mean?
Well, we were talking off air that, you know, you made the transition from Eagle Imports, and now you're doing Walk the Talk America and Avidity full time now. And it's like, you don't have this other thing that's taking up all your time, so you can put more time, but it's almost like you have less time now because your energy is focused now, where it was kind of scattered for a while, wasn't it?
Well, yeah. And I also had an awesome team at Eagle, you know what I mean? So you can sometimes take that for granted, like, you know, just having great employees that, you know, I could call and say, okay, here, you work on this part. Now nobody answers to, you know, they don't have to answer to me at all. I can ask Rob to do something. I can ask Maria to do something. And they're like, yeah, I'll get to that
tomorrow. Yeah, whatever, man, whatever. Yeah. And you've also, obviously, Walk Talk America, we're going to talk a lot about that. Avidity Arms, we'll talk about that. But you've also now got your own podcast that you're doing. So I know that you and Robbie P have been doing some cool stuff, and you've been on a bunch of other podcasts as well, but what's it like to be on the host side of things now?
Actually, I enjoy it, and I'm by no means anywhere near you two guys with the experience and everything like that. So we're starting off really slow. I think my podcast will only have one guest for the rest of my life. It's probably Rob.
You guys are good together, though, so it's fine, you know.
Yeah, no, I actually got a Tracy Guns from Instagram. You know, she's an influencer, awesome girl. Came on today to actually be someone other than Rob. I actually like it because I actually like to have discussions and talk. And what I find is that the time goes so fast. Like, I had to cut us off today because the conversation was great, because I'm curious by nature, you know. So I do. I like it. I can see why you guys do it, because it is kind of interesting to pick people's brains. I love getting people out of the kind of, let's just talk about the only 2A things. I think that's kind of interesting. Like, you know, learning about Tracy today, learning that, you know, obviously pretty girls that are on Instagram, many people think of them as like gun bunnies and things like that. And hearing Tracy, she's a photographer. She was a photographer for the UFC, a social media ninja, you know, like those are the type of things where, you know, unless you're paying attention to her page and you get to kind of like peel that back, you're never going to know that because you're just going to blow by. It's, oh, another hot chick with a gun, like whatever, you know, but no, she's, it was awesome. So.
Yeah. Gear Reports out there was not aware that, that you had sold Eagles. He says, so Sedini has beer money. We need to party with him. And Clover was quick to point out, can't hang with Sedini. So, can't hang. He's a pro.
That's right. Drinks on me.
Well, I think the cool thing, I'm going to bring Clover in here and just jump on in, Clover. And I'll introduce Clover. I think everyone knows who he is by now, but the Tactical Virus, I mean, a Leprechaun, Clover has joined us from Texas. But, you know, the podcasting thing is pretty cool because you could have a, what turns into a meaningfully 30-minute podcast turns into a three-hour recording session because you just get off on 11 different ways, which is great. Unfortunately, you can't cut those into podcasts sometimes. It's just there's a lot of material that you would love to get out, but some of it, it's just hard. So that's what I love about the podcast and recording is you have conversations and it just goes on. I mean, you and I, the first time we talked on the podcast, we had like a 2.5-hour conversation and I used 40 minutes of it. So it's just, it's one of those things where you're gonna, you know, it's hard sometimes because you have so much information you want to get out there, and unless you want to divide it into like 3 or 4 different segmented podcasts, it's tough. I know Clover was going through the same thing a couple of days ago. He had like a 2-hour conversation. He had to whittle it down to 45 minutes, you know?
Yeah, actually, yeah. I was going to ask both of you, how do you stay on task or do you just wing it? I mean, at times, because like today I had to throw it out the window. I had a list, but one conversation leads to another.
Clover, when you answer that one first?
It's hard to do. It really is because you're going to get thrown curveballs is the problem. So,
yeah.
You got to be flexible. You got to be able to roll with it. Obviously. I keep a calendar and I set my little alarms for that. And so when it's time to send a link out to somebody to record something or whatever, or a reminder that, okay, I need to reach back out to this person. They said they were busy this week, but they're not next week. So, I need to set a reminder. So, sadly, I'm tied to the digital realm pretty heavily when it comes to the organization and trying to stay on schedule. But well, like I said, things are going to happen. I mean, I've had, you know, it seems like at least once a week I've got a guest that bails. They're like a no show. Something happens. I mean, not that they bail on me because they don't want to be there, but life happens and something come up or they just forgot, which happens sometimes too. And then you have issues happen, which I realized, yesterday. There was 2 podcasts that I accidentally deleted. I had them all recorded and done and accidentally deleted them. So I had to reach back out to the people and say, hey, can we possibly do this again, reschedule? Because I feel like an idiot, but what are you going to do?
Yeah. Now, Mike, Toby out there is a buddy of ours from Gear Report, but he wants to know the title of your podcast, which platforms like Stitcher, iTunes and all that. Where can they find this just amazing podcast?
Yeah, amazing podcast. If a man records a podcast in the middle of a forest, it doesn't make a sound.
You can find it on Ashley Madison, I think.
That's right. You can find it on Craigslist.
It's nobody. eBay, you know.
The bathroom door, the local truck stop. It's it's all over the place.
No, I have a YouTube channel. And honestly, I purposely have... I haven't decided on a platform yet because I'm trying to kind of hone it in and get it to a science. Because right now it's rough. You know what I mean? And I may have to pick your guys' brain about that a little bit. But
let it be rough. Let it be rough and put it out.
Let it be rough, yeah.
Because there's something to be said about the journey. If you put it out there, it's possible you put it out there and it seems intimidating. If you really, really polished it up and then you jump out there, then it can seem intimidating. Whereas if you actually start putting it out there from day one and kind of people see your roots and it's like, hey, I wasn't always this polished or this clean. I mean, it was a progression. So don't, don't be nervous or anything by coming on a podcast and talking with me.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that helps. I'll figure out where I'm going to start hosting it, but as of right now, it's just on my YouTube page.
Well, the beauty with the podcast is that all you really have to do is you have to find a host. And honestly, I'm not gonna lie, there's one option if you're talking about having all of your options unlimited as far as hours and storage capacity and all this other stuff. There's really only one option out there unless you want to pay out the nose. But the cool thing about it is the host you choose is not too terribly important, because from there you get a little link, what they call an RSS feed, and you push that out to multiple other platforms, pretty much every platform out there. So all you got to worry about with the host is just that one place.
Uh-oh, here comes Pincus. He's one tough customer.
No, everybody sees it.
Robbie is in the hizzy. So I really wanted to put you guys ride those little scooters at Indy as the thumbnail, but I didn't know if you would have liked that or not.
If it's in the public, we haven't sued anyone over it yet. So, you know, you can use
yet. Yeah,
I'd have to sue Mike.
So, well, you know, welcome in, Rob. Rob's on the road, you know, and I want to say this is, you know, to bring you in here, Rob, real quick, is I want to say I wish you would just do more. I wish you would do something in the community worthwhile. And most important, I really wish that you would maybe speak your mind out about topics that you care about. What are you doing these days? Are you just driving around trying to find new friends?
Yeah, that's it. I try to keep to myself. I'm kind of like a hermit, but like a mobile hermit. Mute. That's my new thing. I've been doing it for about 20 minutes. I didn't talk to anybody. I didn't stop anywhere. I didn't
obviously you're anything. Here. You talk to anybody.
Yeah. So after that, it was 20 minutes. It got old. I'm back.
Well, I know that you've been out. I can't even keep up with your travel schedule. You post all the time where you're going, but I know that you're out there doing a lot of training. You're obviously doing a lot of work. And with Walk the Talk America and Avidity Arms with Michael Sedini, who we're talking with, guys. And if you guys have any questions for Mike or for Rob, please go ahead and put them out there. My question for you right now is about Avidity Arms, Rob. And Clover and I were talking earlier. Eventually, this thing's going to be called a PD-25, but you know, waiting 25 years for it. But Clover says it might be the PD-AARP by the time we see it. Is this thing going to be real or not? I've shot it. I know that it's out there.
It exists. I thought you guys would have handled this in the first, you know, 10 minutes of the show. I thought, Mike,
we're waiting for you, man.
It's the Where's Waldo with firearm industry.
We're waiting for all the other companies to go out of business. So
yeah, there you go.
Stop buying guns, guys. Wait for
marketing strategy.
I've got one in the trunk. So there are a whole bunch of them out there. I mean, there's been like 60 or 70 of them made at this point. I don't know. Did you guys talk about it at all, Mike? Did we talk about it?
No.
We just started. Okay. Hey, Rob, someone out there saying they can't really hear you. Is there any way to turn your volume up a little bit? I don't know if you can or not.
Is that better?
Oh yeah, yeah. I want you to go through
the road too, though. That's it. That nailed it.
So, I don't know. It's app. I think I just muted myself.
No, you're fine. Holy hell!
And I'm back.
Hey, there he is.
I told you. It
looked like a dash cam earlier, so you know it is what it is.
I know. I don't know. So I'll try to talk louder. As part of, I was a hermit. Remember when I was a hermit? So I was talking really quiet.
Yeah.
As a hermit.
Yeah.
Mike, why don't you tell everybody what's going on corporately, and then I'll talk about the engineering production issues.
Corporately, we had to get it out of Eagle, and that was a big first step for us, and start our own, an actual company called Avidity Arms, as opposed to underneath an umbrella. So, you want me to keep going?
Yeah, that was good. Good.
Yeah. Wait, what was the question? I saw a question for me. Am I going to
the question was, this G-Webs out there wants to know, Mike, if you plan on going to the Gun Rights Policy Conference in Phoenix on September 20th.
Yeah.
But I like the way Pinky sounds there, Boren.
I figured Rob would, but I didn't know. You know, you've been driving all over the place too, Mike. So it's, I know you guys have been crazy. And, you know, we were talking about Walk the Talk America earlier. And I know that we're over a year now, which is congratulations, by the way. You already passed the 1 year anniversary. And I know that you guys are doing a lot of great work. You know, a year into this, are you where you thought you would be? Is it better than you thought it would be? Or, you know, where are you right now compared to where you wanted to be a year ago?
So it's a good question. Rob and I were just talking about that the other day on one of the episodes we recorded. We are way beyond where I thought we would be. I'm happy where we're at, because when we first started, it was almost like we were just going to raise money and hand it over to mental health organizations. Here we are 1 year later, and we have some of the coolest programs that are ours for the 2A community, which I'm very happy about. So,
yeah. Now, Rob, I know that you're working with a couple of different organizations. You got 2A org, and you've got Save the Second and all that. When you're working about your schedule, I can only imagine. I have a whiteboard that I kind of keep my stuff on a schedule. How do you keep everything between the different organizations, the different projects, and all of the different travel plans? How do you keep your schedule anywhere near sane?
I don't.
Well, there you go. Yeah. He's going to go.
Doesn't really
whatever happens.
Yeah, it really is. It's like, you know, it's kind of like a squeaky wheel, you know, kind of thing, or urgency. So, and Mike will tell you, like, somebody, like, I know about Gun Rights Policy Conference only because it's a big deal, right? It's one of the biggest events of the year. I'm really looking forward to speaking there this year. I'm actually trying to see if we can get some time for Mike to talk about WTTA specifically on the mic. So I've asked Second Amendment Foundation if there's a spot for him, and they're looking for one. Of course, they're so busy, and there's so many people that attend. It's so that's a big deal. But honestly, like, it's funny. I just last night I was out with some friends. One of my best friends in the world lives in San Luis Obispo, or just outside of there. I was 20 minutes from town. He had no idea I was going to be there. He knew I was a couple hours away teaching a course on Sunday, but he had no idea that I was going to be going over there to the coast. And I really didn't either. I knew I was going to be kind of within striking distance, but that came up, that opportunity to go over there, have a meeting, hang out with some other friends came up, and I sent him a note that, hey, dude, I'm in town. And, you know, we've been running together for a decade or so. I mean, he didn't even miss a beat. It was like, oh, okay, cool. I'll meet you. Tell me where you're going to be in 2 hours. I got to finish something up. I'll meet you somewhere. Like, he gets it, right? Other people, one of the other guys that was there actually sent me a note like 6 weeks ago, and he goes, hey dude, up for a great glass of wine or something? And I was like, I was creeped out because I saw his number come up, and I had literally just gone into like a room that had a bunch of wine bottles, so I thought he was following me around. But to him it was like, hey, you're coming into town. And I'm like, when? You talking about 6 weeks from now, dude? No. Don't hit me up in June talking about mid-July, because, you know, May and June are just crazy months. So I'm sure I want to drink a glass of wine probably. But, you know, I talked to him last Friday about Monday. And that's so it really is. It's almost all very short term. Lots of, you know, nimble, go left, go right. This podcast, right? You guys hit us up a few days ago. Can you do this?
Yeah.
And I think I said, like, maybe probably.
Right? Maybe probably. Like, exactly. Your exact words. Yeah.
I'm pulled over in a rest stop like 20 minutes from Lake Tahoe. I don't even know if I'm in Nevada or California right now, but we're on a podcast, you know? I thought, like, for example, like 8 minutes ago, I thought I was going to talk about the Avidity Arms PD-10. But now I'm talking about my schedule. So why plan?
Well, we're gonna talk about the PD-10 because, you know, Mike was trying to talk about that side, but the engineering side, let's do talk about that. And I shot it, and Clover shot it at range at SHOT Show, and it's a great gun. I think there's a lot of people ready for it to come out. And the questions, I'm sure you've had them all, is why isn't it out? And obviously you want to make it perfect. So kind of take us down a timeline of the last year of where it is now and how close to your standards are they?
Well, I think first of all, perfect is, you know, Glock already does that, right? So we're not going to do like perfection. But we're going to, you know, I've got to be able to put my head down on the pillow. And I think Mike feels the same way, right? I got to be able to put my head down on the pillow at night and know that there's this gun out there, that if there's a problem with it, it's going to be a user issue. It's going to be an ammo issue. It's going to be a gross anomaly in a part.
you know, it's not going to be like a Hudson. You know, it's not going to be where we ship 500, 300 of them have problems, and we act like, oh, gee, that's shocking. Well, the way we're not, because we're going to be shocked, it'll be really shocking. And I want it to be like 499 out of the first 500 don't work if something goes wrong, because anything less than that is probably just oversight, right? Like, it has to be so ridiculously missed that the whole thing is a failure, or it needs to be really, really, really good. And I think that's where people get screwed up, is good enough. This idea of, well, we're only having about 20% of those fail, so let's ship it because 80% is pretty good. Well, you can't do that with a life and death defensive tool. So it's got to be kind of all or nothing. And right now, I feel close enough to a significant failure point where it would just be nothing. It would kill it. And that's what happened to Hudson, right? It became nothing because too many of them failed. So the whole thing went away. I don't even know where those people are now. Like, literally, people can't find them. And you know, Mike and I, we're social butterflies. We're going to be out here doing things, so we can't screw this up. You know, at the end of the day, right now, I would say this. It's hard to go back a year. If you go back like 5 years, right? But 5 years ago, when this was just barely an idea, and then that first year or two, really, things moved really fast. And in talk to production development, things moved super fast. So we brought the gun out, started letting people shoot it. I mean, I had instructors on the range standing around at a conference shooting it in the fall of 2016. So we're almost 3 years now into shooting guns, right? And like you said, you guys have shot it. Lots of people have shot it. We've got a lot of positive feedback. You know, when I hand somebody a prototype gun and the trigger is a little sticky, that's embarrassing, but it's just part of the process. I got to get the feedback I can get. Last year or two, we've been handing people guns for the most part that were running great, that the triggers were exactly what I wanted, that everything was functional, that it looked the way it was supposed to look. It felt the way it was supposed to feel, except for the final texturing of the frames, which we now do have done. So it got much slower for the last couple of years. And then really, we took a year. I wouldn't say we took a year off. We were in standstill mode for about a year, waiting for things to play out with the corporate separation from Eagle. And that was painful. You know, it was to all of the, you know, that where you go to the website and you see the gun that I had laser etched, you know, still not for sale, all of the hashtag when it's ready. A lot of that was trying not to air, you know, some of the trouble struggles corporately we're having, because it had nothing to do with engineering. We were just at a standstill. So we're back moving forward. There's, you know, one little issue right now. What we have is a tolerance stacking issue, which I think is pretty common. The guns work beautifully, and I love the trigger, the way we can assemble the trigger and we can make sure the guns work. The problem is when that's making, you know, five guns a month, if that, right? When we want to make 500 guns a week, I need somebody who's, you know, essentially like a $15, $20 an hour employee to be able to, you know, push pins through holes and just make a gun that comes out of the box when somebody gets it 3 months, 6 months later at their dealer, you know, dealer out of the dealer counter. I need that gun to feel just like the one that I or our engineer or some other gunsmithy type guy assembled, or yet because of tolerances. And we just have to play this game of figuring out, you know, which one of our vendors do we go to? Do we go to the vendor making the frame? Do we go to the vendor making the trigger bar? Do we go to the vendor making the trigger shoe? Do we change springs and buy a different spring from the spring vendor? How do we get the right combination of parts so that our design will work reliably as, you know, intended over the entire span of all of those parts tolerant? And that's just a matter of tweaking. Back at that last month. And of course, my training tour is about to end. I only have a couple more classes left, which means August and September, we really can get down to it. And I think people are going to see a lot of fast motion again over the next, you know, several months.
Clover, you have anything you want to bring up or talk about and ask any questions?
Yeah, as far as the design up until the point that you had a prototype that was able to be fired, what was the biggest hurdle to overcome to that point?
Mike, go for it. Mike, ready for it. Well, you might say, Mike, no, he was the biggest hurdle. You got it.
I don't know. I think really, to be fair, like Mike points himself like and gets, I get what he's saying, but that didn't come till long after the original design phase. And that was just Mike being cautious because he knew that things were going to have to shake up and change between him and Eagle and between Avidity and Eagle. So there was a you know, several months of hesitation where I'm looking at Mike like, we got to do this, we got to do this, we got to do this. And he's like, we can't do it. Wait, we got to do it later. We'll do it some other way. Just give me a minute. And I'm not really a give me a minute kind of guy. That, I think we talked about patience in the last Mike Sedini podcast. We talked about my sort of disdain for the whole like patience as an overly valued virtue. But so I don't really have any. That's probably why I feel that way. Right. But at the same time, the design that was on a napkin sketch. Right. So Brad, our engineer, original engineer on the project, he did an amazing job. I mean, I always said this, you know, about if nothing else came, he's not working with us anymore. But one of the things that he did super well was take the original, like literal napkin sketch ideas and the list of specifications that I wanted and made them real. And he got, you know, drawings in a computer and then 3D printed models and then metal 3D printed models and then our original prototype frames. Not much has changed. His credit as an engineer and to my appreciation to him of staying true to my original intent and desire, that gun is very much what I laid out, you know, in that now infamous article that teased the whole project. If you go back and read the article about the perfect defensive carry gun, and I compare it to this unicorn, like good luck finding it. I listed up what it eventually would be the specifications of the PD-10. And I did that just to put it out in the public space would take. And then we were shooting. Well, that's not true. Within a year, we were holding 3D prints of that gun. And probably in about 18 months to 2 years, we were shooting that gun. And we really haven't changed the design much at all until now at the very end. And again, we're just tweaking around tolerances. We're not changing anything about the design itself.
Yeah, there's if I could just interject something here, too.
I was going to sort of say, take it away. Yeah.
Yeah. People have to understand. And I know Rob takes a lot of heat, but Rob's also, you know, nobody knows who I am. So it's like one of those things where I kind of get to escape when people are expecting or they want answers. None of us did this full time ever. Like, this was never a full time job. Avidity Arms was one piece of five things. And then I threw Walk the Talk America on top of Rob on top of that. Right. So it's like we have taken on, and Rob became president of 2AO. I mean, it's kind of like Tool, A Perfect Circle, you know, Pussifer. Like, Maynard is doing a bunch of different things, right? And he focuses on projects. Avidity had, you know, times when we could spend a lot of time on it and money, and then there were other times when we had to put that energy elsewhere. So, and I will promise you this, if we had the money that Hudson had, and that's what we did all day long, this thing would have been out a long time ago.
Well, that's a great point. I want to bring that up, and I don't want you to give it numbers exactly, but I don't think people understand what it takes to start a pistol from scratch and make it an idea to in the market, not only time and engineering, but money and capital that it takes. I mean, can you give someone an idea? Is it seven figures at least? Is it multiple seven figures? Or what is that number out there?
Here's how I would do it. I'm going to do it as a recommendation, is if you're asking me, Mike, I'm starting my own gun tomorrow, how much money do I need to go out and get? And I'm going to say, to be safe, go get $1.5 million to $2 million. Boom. I'm not saying that we spent that, but what I'm saying is that's what I would tell you if I were giving you my recommendation, if you're going to start a gun from scratch. And then there'd be variables to it too, right? Do you have your own machines? Do you have your own facility? Do you have your own employees? Do you have a cool team like Eagle that can basically handle some of the, you know, grunt work of paperwork and all that stuff? There's a lot of layers to it. So it depends on how you're starting. But it's not cheap and it's not easy. And, you know, I go online and sometimes I mix it up with people, and I'm actually joking. You know, I it's just funny to hear people just say things like, you know, I'm done with this gun. I'm never going to buy it because you disappointed me. It's like, okay. You know?
Well, and I think a lot of people understand is, and we're not talking once the gun is built, you still have at that point, you have a marketing strategy. You have to find buyers, suppliers, and the middlemen. You know, you have all these brokers that you have. There's so much. Just, it's not just, hey, I've got this design for a firearm and I've got $1 million. I think I'm going to go build this thing and become a gazillionaire and all of that. Now, Toby's out there saying kudos to you, Rob, and to Mike for this thing. But having this gun associated with both of your names and people in the community know you, especially in the industry, they all know you. Is it kind of nerve wracking attaching your names to a product that, you know, if it fails, it's bad? I mean, that could be nerve wracking to begin with, isn't it?
No, if I had Mike putting pressure on me to say, we need to start selling guns, Rob. Like, we just, I get it. It's not perfect. It's never going to be perfect. You said so yourself. You said we were on a ghost and you said it's never going to be perfect, Rob. So it's good enough. Let's just do it. Then it would be nerve wracking, right? Because then it would be a problem, but I don't have that. Even like that was never the problem with Eagle by any stretch, right? Eagle was always about like, let's make sure, let's do this almost like too much, right? Like, let's get 17 different barrels made by 17 different vendors and see which one is 0.5% better and 0.5 penny less. Like, I don't have that kind of patience or tolerance at all. But at the same time, the things that need to be right need to be right. And that's where, you know, Mike and I definitely like agree. Right. And we may not agree at every turn or juncture or step or even how far to take a step at any given moment. But we are in line with it's we'd rather walk away from this or sell the idea to somebody else and let it be their thing than come out with something that we're not going to be proud of if it fails financially. Like I've said this probably might not much, but if we put the gun out that Rob Pincus wants and that gun fails to sell well, I'll be disappointed, obviously. Like I don't know what that feels like, but it doesn't feel like failure. You know what I mean? The gun, if the gun that I wanted, it turns out I didn't have the pulse of the sales and marketing side, I'll be, you know, disappointed in that, but I won't be disappointed in the gun, the project, and maybe it'll be somebody else can market it and spin it better and we'll sell that gun design to somebody else, or maybe it'll be really popular in Brazil. I don't know but I'll be surprised if we can't sell it because I have been doing this for a long time. I do. You know, I've seen thousands of students with thousands of guns in their hands, and I've watched now hundreds of people, if not over 1,000, couple thousand people, shoot PD-10 prototypes. I believe it's going to work financially, but it has to work as the gun that we designed as a team and that we're bringing to market. And that's the only thing that would be nerve-wracking if there was pressure to do something else. I know a lot of guys who've gone into gun projects with major companies where they said, yeah, we want you to design a gun. At the end of the day, it's not really the gun that they would have designed. It's just a gun that their name is attached to. And this was, I never wanted to do that.
Here's another point I want to make. Eagle has been around for 30 years. Eagle has employees that I've had that make a really high salary just because of the nature of the beast, being a loyal employee for 30 years, right? There's a lot of employees there. They have a certain amount of income that they have to make to cover all of our lifestyles, right? You know, guys like Raphael, everything. And there's also all these other gods, you know, the other manufacturers, right? Your Bursas, your Metro Arms. Rob and I taking this out of there and having it as our own, we have no overhead right now. So we can be nimble. We can go different directions. We don't have to have the massive amount of sales that Eagle would have to have for it. And we also don't have, whereas like the bread and butter, which is Bursa, you know, needs a little bit more attention. And then we got to push away from this. This is ours. We can do what we can go where we want to. We can take it where we want. And that's a big difference. And that takes a lot of pressure off because, you know, if I had to pay right now for this building and employ 9 or 10 employees, you know, that would be a little bit of a game changer on how many we need to sell, you know.
And you also don't have a schedule. You don't have deadlines to say you've got to get this out by this time. It's we're going to get this out when we get it out, because like Rob said, is failure is an interesting word, because like you said, is it a failure because it's mechanically an engineering a travesty of a firearm, or is it a marketing advertising wrong place at the wrong time? Whatever. I think that we would all agree that financially you want to be successful, but if it's a quality firearm, and it may take a couple years for it to kick off, but if it's a quality firearm, I think you guys know enough people in the industry that are going to be able to get their hands on one and say, guys, you don't know what you're missing. This is a great firearm. I think that if it was a quality built or designed firearm, that's a whole different, like a Hudson. If you're a Hudson and you've got some serious issues and you push it out into the market, there's one that comes to mind, Sky. Sky a few years ago had a great marketing plan, but the gun sucked and they pushed it out a year, probably too early. And they were hurt for a long time because of that. So I like where you guys are going. There are a lot of questions engineering and design wise on this. I don't know if you guys want to take these now, or do you want to do this at a different time, but there's a lot of people that are interested in some design parts of the gun. I don't know if you want to answer a couple of them, Rob and Mike.
I don't talk about guns. That's not my thing.
Yeah, you're not a gun guy. You're the most fun gun guy.
Rob,
let me point out something too. As we were talking about the financing side and some of the executive decisions and things like that, and I think that where a lot of these companies shoot themselves in the foot, no pun intended, is that they come out, they get a workable prototype, they have, you know, half a dozen, 100, you know, whatever, sitting around, and they start doing this pre-order garbage, and then I think that puts pressure on them to, you know, as those pre-orders start stacking up, that puts pressure on them to potentially, they're seeing that money add up, and it just pressures them to release something way too early.
Yeah. Well, I think the pre-order also is harmful, because I don't know this for certain, but I would imagine a lot of these companies use the pre-order to help cover come with some of the behind the scenes costs. They need to start getting some revenue in on these guns to finish the production. So yeah, that creates a whole nother problem at that too. So well, yeah.
Another perk of it too is that you sort of can gauge demand a little bit, but I mean, if you don't understand the way the bell curve works when it has to do with somebody adopting something new, you know, those that adopt new are always going to be there regardless of whether you have a pre-order program or not.
Yeah. Let's just kind of jump in a couple of these questions for you, Rob. Let's see here. Are you contemplating things like undercutting the trigger guard?
Yeah, there is. You look closely at design, and I hear that as, you know, is there an area where the middle finger of the shooting hand is actually up higher than the bottom of the trigger guard at the outside of the trigger guard at the lowest point? There is an
Okay. The next one is are there going to be different back straps and other customizing points to the PD10?
No. Interchangeable back straps is a feature that is sometimes useful on a double stack gun. On a single stack gun, it really isn't, because you can make it bigger, which then kind of defeats the purpose of the slim, small gun. But you don't necessarily need to make it smaller for the, you know, 99% of the human hands out there. It doesn't really need to be smaller. So you don't get that big of an advantage out of interchangeable back straps, especially when you look at the initial startup costs of multiple molds and multiple parts. So if we get to our second gun, third gun, especially if we got into a double stack, I'd definitely be looking more at that. But especially the number of hands we've had on it, I don't think it's going to be there. It would be an almost meaningless sales, you know, marketing point that I don't think a gun really needs.
Yeah. Are the mags going to be polymer, or are they going to be metal based with a polymer base plate? Or have you gotten that far into the details of the mags yet?
Yeah, they're metal mags with a polymer base plate.
Okay. And the last one, it says, no serrations on the front of the slide? Question mark.
Somebody's trying to get me riled up.
Yeah, they are.
As an educator, and if you haven't heard this answer yet out there in internet land, as a firearms defensive shooting arm defense educator first before firearms marketer, I don't think I should be putting a feature on a gun that I would actually advocate against people using. So I get that there are people out there that like front serrations, yeah, fix the gun up near the muzzle. I don't advocate for it. So I'm not going to put it on the Rob Pincus gun. I have, however, said that so many people have asked. I guarantee you within a week or two of our first production shipment, I will be live on video with an auction opportunity and a Dremel tool putting front serrations on one of those early model T10s, just so somebody can spend, but it's going to be pricey. But I want to see how high the auction goes, because apparently everybody wants front serrations.
William Keller out there says, "Hey Rob, how's the Kimber Evo doing?"
It's still surviving. That thing's like at 2,000 rounds without getting cleaned or anything. Crossbreed holsters. When I first approached one of my buddies at Crossbreed Holsters, and I'm like, "Hey, I need a holster for this thing because it's actually working." And they're like, "For you want a holster for a Kimber? Let me say that again." And I just saw this last week they announced that they now have their holsters for the Kimber Evo. So apparently other people must have working models as well. It's holding up. Pretty impressive.
Nice. I want to bring Mike in on this one, and this is more on the business side, but the question out there is, are there any partnerships that you guys have with holster manufacturers or attachable lights, under rail lights or anything? Have you guys worked on partnerships with other companies before getting it into the market yet?
Yeah, there's a few, Rob, right? I mean, we have a standard Picatinny rail on there, so, you know, there's going to be a lot of accessory companies there, you know.
Yeah,
that part's that part's easy. But the holster thing, I probably have six different holster companies that have sent me, or I've sent guns to them, or we've gone off the 3D. We had Rings make a few guns for us early on, new guns. So we have several holster companies that already have models ready to you know, list on the website or ship to us for some package deals. And then as far as, we did actually make one of the very few changes we made from the original shooting prototypes was that we did extend the rail length on the Picatinny. And that way we could accommodate some larger lights. Because in my mind, it's like, all right, it's a subcompact single stack. It's a compact single stack gun. We don't need to accommodate a giant light. But, you know, obviously the market likes some of those big lights and lasers, even on small guns. So we went ahead and added an extra rail section in there. No harm, no foul. And people will be able to put just about any light you would put on a defensive gun. If it doesn't fit, it's probably not a gun that I, going back to, you know, Personal Defense Network hat, Rob, would tell you, yeah, you don't want that on your handgun anyway.
And you're talking to a guy and myself, I do not particularly like attached lights on guns. I don't like having where my gun is pointed, where I have to, you know, if I want to see something, I've got to point my gun in that corner over there. You know, it might be pointed. So I'm always like having it with my weak hand or whatever and working that way. So for me, I understand that, you know, I doesn't matter what a light does, but I think there's a lot of people these days that are, they're worried about the attachments. They're worried about the accessories. Is there going to be like an RMR, you know, availability for this? I mean, that's you know what I'm saying? It's like, come on, man, this is a single stack. This is a great gun. I've held it, but it's not a race gun. You know, you're not going to go shoot competition with this probably, you know? So I think people don't understand what different types of guns are useful. I think is a gun is a gun. So, you know, I keep doing what you guys are doing. Clover, you got anything you want to bring up?
No, I think I'm good. There are some questions out there about, ammunition plus P rated, that sort of stuff. So okay. What my preferred ammunition?
Plus P rated. Yeah. My okay. Preferred carry ammunition is the plus P Winchester Defender round. So that's probably the round that's been shot out of it more than anything else. We've also shot like Silvertip, some of the lower powered rounds, the Winchester Train and Defend. I've shot a bunch of the SIG hollow point out of it, some Remington hollow points, some Black Hills. I think it's a bunch of hollow points. So we've shot a whole bunch of different carry ammunition through them as well.
And so I've got a follow up myself on that. I mean, I've carried a lot of the pocket pistols and shot quite a few of them over the years. And I found one thing since we're dealing with ammunition. It seems like if you bought ammo, you're fine. But it seems like when you get into some of the hollow point stuff, some of the self-defense stuff, it's not a huge issue, I should say, if you kind of keep things clean and the ramp polished and stuff like that on some of these smaller pistols. What type of consideration from the start was, obviously it was designed from the start to be a self-defense handgun. Was there a lot of consideration put into, you know, making sure that, you know, your hollow point ammunition and stuff like that feeds properly?
Yeah, it was a, you know, non-starter if it was only going to work with ball ammunition. So I was actually shooting hollow point even out of some of our 3D printed guns just to start to get an idea, you know, if we were on the right track or not. It would have been a shame to get, you know, 2 years in and then say, oh, well, now we're going to start shooting hollow points out of it. So we started very early.
Yeah, I've never, I mean, through all, for all the relationships I had with manufacturers, whether they're mine from the Eagle standpoint or other manufacturers, I mean, we all always talk about a break-in period too. You know, many times our firearm just not jumping straight into hollow points all the time. That's just a side note. So,
yeah. And this is an interesting question because we assume that people out there know what the hell we're talking about, first of all. We say the PD-10, there are some viewers or listeners and playing a replay that may not really understand what the PD-10 is. And can you guys maybe collectively or either one of you, either one, both of you, really talk about maybe the dimensions, what's the marketing pitch, what's the category? You know, I know it's always a concealed carry gun. I've shot it, so I know. But, you know, for some people that might not understand what it is, what is the sales pitch or the marketing pitch and the niche that you're looking for?
That's definitely Mike.
That's me? Yeah.
Listen, I wanted to work with my friend, and obviously I went to him with this idea. Rafael DeValle, the national sales manager for Eagle, and I, along with Maria, we were talking about doing something. We wanted to work with people we knew, that people had influence in the industry. Went to Rob, kind of said, "Hey, Rob, if would you design something?" And he was like, "Yeah, I want to work with you guys. Let's do it." So, you know, for me, that's it's a pet project that we have where, you know, people got to understand Rob and I are different in a sense that Rob's out there. He's good with marketing. He's all those things. I'm big on the stuff that nobody really cares to talk about. Right. Like how crucial it is to have a great customer service team with your organization. Like that's one of Eagle's strengths. Because we had many guns, right? We had brands, some of them not so great, right? You go back to the old Llama days. And the key to staying in business when you have a company that does like 50 good guns and then 50 bad guns and they're all over the place like Sybil is the team that's around that firearm. Okay. So to me, those are the things that I care about. That's how I know we're going to be successful because there's all these things that nobody, who wants to go out on forums or in social media and be like, well, what's their customer service going to be like? No one's saying that. Right. And those are the things that I care about. So, you know, as far as dimensions of the guns and everything like that, that's why I love to have Rob talk about that stuff because it's his child. You know,
you know, if I remember correctly, like I said, I got to shoot a couple mags through it in January, and it's that size of the SIG P365, the M&P Shield. It's that single stack. You know, if I remember correctly, it's that size. It's, you know, probably under 4-inch barrel. If I remember correctly, is that about right? Or around 4-inch, maybe a little less than 4-inch barrel?
So what's funny is that's exactly the impression that I want people to have. It's funny when people look at the spec sheet, they see the numbers, they think it's going to be a lot bigger than it actually is because it's actually a 4-inch barrel and it's more Glock 19-ish in the dimension.
It doesn't seem like it, though, when you're holding your hand. It's not bulky, you know.
I have one right here.
Uh-oh. Oh, right. So there it is.
There it is.
There it is. And like I said, it's a great feeling gun. It shoots. I really enjoyed it. I think Rob might be in cell hells. He's kind of frozen. That's a great look.
You know what? He saw this and
I didn't.
Oh, rope button. Go ahead, Mike.
Okay, let me take this. Look at this. This plaque here has the Winchester ammo.
Oh,
There he went.
That's the thing. He sees his own creation and then he just disappears. This is crazy. Crossbreed holsters. Look at that. I actually have these plaques. The great thing, Rob is great at marketing because he got us on the cover of two magazines without a gun that's for sale on the market. No, this doesn't have really any specs on it. Yeah, this doesn't really have any specs on it.
Maybe a larger slide than I anticipated, but it wasn't bulky. And I don't have huge hands. You know,
it's very thin, man. It
felt great in the hand. It really did. I don't remember the trigger weight. I'm going to guess it's probably around 4.5, roughly right out of the box. If I had to guess, if I remember correctly, Clover, do you remember, maybe what you felt like the trigger pull might be?
Yeah, I'm going to say it was probably a little bit heavier than that. I mean, not by much. You're definitely in the ballpark.
Yeah, yeah, but
I remember it being
6,000 rounds too. So
I do remember it being. I don't know. Glock 43 ish in size, maybe a little bit longer.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the thing is that's the hard part of talking about something that the final product's not out. So the trigger, for some people that have shot it, is not necessarily what the end result is going to be. So I think people are going to be pretty happy with the end result. And that's one of the last hurdles we have right now is getting that trigger bar assembly and everything, you know.
Well, and you know as well as I do, whether you want this to happen or advocate for it or not, you know that as soon as it comes out, there's going to be companies out there that, especially if it's anywhere in, you know, got any kind of popularity, it's going to be making aftermarket something to lower this weight or help with the recoil spring or some weird something.
And you're also talking about when we were at Range Day at SHOT Show, and maybe Rob can answer this, but I mean, by the time you and I got to pull that trigger, Clover, there's no telling how many times that trigger been pulled that day. So that trigger is definitely going to be a lot lighter than when it started that day. So when I say 4.5 pounds, it might be a 6 pound trigger right out of the box, but, you know, how many, first of all, real quick, Rob, specs out of the box, what is the trigger weight about going to be? And then two, how many rounds went through that handgun at Range Day this year?
Did you shoot the cut down, quote unquote, PD-8, yeah, or did you shoot a full size?
No, I saw a smaller one.
Okay, so you probably shot that cut down PD-8. So it's still a 4-inch barrel. It was just a cut down grip. That gun, that slide has at least 10,000, 15,000 rounds through it. And the frame, probably at that point, I'm sure that one had at least 2,000 rounds through it. Because that, before we made one of the structural changes we made was to add metal to the rear rail sections on the frame. So some guns don't have, especially some of the subcompacts and thinner guns don't have metal on the rear frame sections. And we hoped we could avoid having that assembly step and having that extra two parts on there. But at the end of the day, we weren't able to get reliably past 5,000 rounds with enough of the sample guns, the early prototypes, to allow for that. And you know, here's one of your things with market research, right? We get told, well, you know, 95% of the guns that get bought aren't going to ever see 5,000 rounds through them. So you don't really need to worry about it. You can just, if somebody's frame rails break, just give them a new gun. The frame costs you $5 by the time it's all said and done. Like, send them a new gun, right? And when you amortize the cost of that one frame, and then but the problem is, no, I'm not going to do that. Because here's the thing. Most of the people that are going to buy these early guns, I hope, are people who've been following my career in the defensive firearms training community for a decade or two. They're people who train. They're people who shoot. There are people who are going to need to rely on this gun someday, potentially to defend themselves or their families. I can't say, oh, we'll just send them a new one if they really shoot 5,000 rounds and break it. No. So that was one. So that's, I know that frame has basically been retired because it's now close to that 3,500, 4,000 round mark. And that was the first gun that was cut down into that PD-8 configuration. So that one then probably was 2,020. By the end of that day, I'm sure it was 2,500.
Wow. Yeah.
So, but out of the box, like I said, it's going to be about 4.5, 5 pound trigger.
Okay, so I was around the right ballpark, sure. And obviously, after that many rounds, it's gonna be, you know, it's gonna loosen up a little bit, get a little bit lighter after a range day, especially if as many rounds went through that. And we've talked a lot about the PD10 and Avidity Arms, and I don't want to stop talking about that, but I do want to transition back to WTTA for a little bit and talk about what some of the initiatives. And you've already said that you're much further ahead of where you thought you were going to be this time last year. So now that you've kind of seen what the last year has done, and you've got a little bit more time, Mike, to kind of maybe put your energy into it, what are some of the projects and initiatives that you'd be working on the next year?
Well, I'm flying up to Reno tomorrow. I'm going to connect with Rob up there and Jake from Zephyr Wellness. So we're kicking off our very first continuing education course for mental health professionals and gun culture, which I'm excited about because I think we can really get that rolling. And that's going to have a bright future in terms of what it does to connect the two sides, if you will, sides, communities, industries, whatever. I think that the more people that we can get involved with the programs like the mental health card, I know Clover, you've been instrumental, and so have you, Ghost, and kind of getting this out there, stuff like that. I'm hitting the road with Debbie from Mental Health America and doing some speaking engagements at a lot of conferences, which is good, which I didn't ask to tag along. That makes me happy. It's like she's saying, look, you need to be here and meet these people. Rob and I Rob was down here. We worked a lot. I mean, Rob, there's some things that came about with some contacts from you that I think could be pretty promising in the future. The sky's the limit. There's a couple things that we have to kind of narrow down right now, and just to kind of, because we're spread out very thin and there's not a lot of people doing actual grunt work in terms of day-to-day stuff. So we got to get some a little bit more experience in the fundraising aspect of this, because we got a lot of stuff we got to pay for. It's making a difference. One story I want to share with you guys is we had a gentleman come through the Instagram page and he shared his story. And at first he was real hesitant because he didn't really want to put it out there. But he had lost his firearms rights about 6 years ago because he went through a breakup in New York. He went through a bad breakup and he never hurt anybody else.
So that's a bad breakup if you're losing firearm rights.
Well, no, not necessarily. See, and this is one of the things that, if it wasn't for Walk the Talk America, this would not be happening right now. He had a very, very tough breakup for him personally. And anyone who's ever been through heartbreak or loss like that knows what that means. He didn't know how to handle it. He did some cutting. Which was what a lot of people do to release pain, and knew he needed to get help, went and checked himself in voluntarily, and didn't realize that he was ending his gun rights 6 years later without incident ever again, only that one incident. And that's the stuff that Mental Health America didn't even know about. And it's because they've never looked into that stuff. They never cared. So immediately I get this story. It's kind of funny. Every time someone gives me a story, I got to take it with a grain of salt, okay? Because you never know if someone's giving you a story and they're leaving out the part where maybe he wrapped his hands around that woman's neck, right? Like, hey, I lost my gun rights just because I checked myself. So you have to vet things and kind of get the full story. But I passed it along to Debbie from Mental Health America, and she called me and she was like, this isn't right. Because I said, listen, everything you say about mental health and how mental health is a crisis that can be overcome, and you shouldn't wear a scarlet A around your chest, on your chest, after you've had a moment of crisis for the rest of your life, this fits right in that category. So she read the story that he wrote and then said, call this gentleman back and find out the exact details of everything. I called this person back. We talked on the phone. It was the first time. And I was so happy because not only he was able to communicate his story in such a way that it was elegant and everything like that. And there was a lot of sincerity in everything he was saying. And he was like, the hypocrisy of the New York Safe Act and just New York State in general is he could buy a hunting rifle, but he couldn't buy a handgun. Like, that makes zero sense. Right. Zero. So I go back and I tell Debbie, it story checks out, because I even asked him. I said, hey, man, did you ever lay hands on this woman or anything like that? And he's like, her? I loved her. I said, OK, good. This is a story of heartbreak. Right. So I went back to Debbie. Debbie got her advocacy team on it. He's on standby right now. They're trying to get the mental health thing thrown out of anything that has to do, because it doesn't matter if 6 years ago you went through heartbreak and maybe suffered some, PTSD from a breakup or anything like that. It should not affect you 6 years down the line. These are the type of things I'm proud of, man. Like, they would not have known that. They would not have known that these questions are being asked. And Debbie's like, they shouldn't even ask those questions. It doesn't matter.
And there's a lot to that. You know, there are questions that uneducated people don't understand, that those questions don't matter. They just assume that they have to matter for some reason. You got Sarah out there from Hold My Guns, and she's complimenting what you guys are doing, but she also heard you say earlier up in Reno, you guys are doing a certification for mental health professionals. She wants to know if you could talk a little bit more about that. I think she's interested in that.
You want me to take this one, Rob?
Yeah.
All right.
Dad shirt.
if Rob and I read a lot of books, we read books like this, anything that has to do with mental health and firearms, there's not a lot of information out there. I think what's the name of the other book, Rob?
Pirelli. Behavioral Science of Firearms, I think.
Yeah. One of the themes in there is the recommendations from any of the professionals is they encourage professionals to go out there and learn about gun culture if you haven't, right? And it makes complete sense. Rob and I have talked to enough mental health professionals and to know that this is important to bring the two sides together, because sometimes it's just something you don't understand. I always use the analogy of golf. I don't golf. I don't care about golf. I understand why my friends love golf. But if you let me start making laws about golfing, I'm going to start doing some stuff that you're going to be like, whoa, 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 whoa. And I'm going to be like, I don't give a shit. You know what I mean? So
I'm just saying.
So, being that I understand golf, I would never criticize anyone for doing it or make silly laws around it or be like, no, they should use those to build condos or, that I understand what that does for people. I got the idea from being asked to join a group out of Pennsylvania that's all about suicide prevention. They brought me in as sort of a consultant to all these mental health professionals. And what these mental health professionals were doing was taking the information provided to them by the NSSF, and they were walking into gun stores and saying, hey, I'm so-and-so. I have this information here. Can I talk to you about suicide prevention? For me, I was like, well, that's not going to work.
That's weird.
It's better if I'm with them, right? Walking into the gun store, as opposed to someone who might own a store and might be guarded a little bit. And they're like, why is a mental health professional in here trying to talk to me about this? And, they're just flashing the, literature from NSSF. I don't like that. Nothing against the NSSF on that, but it's just my thing is it's sending people. No one's sending gun people into facilities that deal with mental health and be like, go in there and tell them how cool we are and how guns are normal, right? So it's the thing where I'm trying to advise them the best way to go about it. And one of the guys on the first phone conversation actually said, am I even equipped to do this? And I thought at first, I thought he took it personal. I thought he was taking it personal that I was saying, look, you're not in gun culture. For you to go in there and try to just sit somebody down and talk to their people behind the counter, I don't think it's going to work. And actually he said, no, it's not that I'm offended or anything like that. He said, I've never been around guns. I don't know anything about guns. I've never had a friend who could teach me about guns. And I started thinking about myself, right? I was like, I was that guy at one point in my life. So I got off the phone and hung up and I said, well, why don't we do it? We should do it. And I found the right guys. Obviously, Rob was there for the training part. But Jake from Zephyr Wellness, who is a mental health professional, he sees the value in this because as more and more gun owners come out of the shadows to talk about mental health, therapists are going to have to understand our culture as well, right? And it's little things like, why does anyone need to own more than five guns? You know, like, okay, let me show you. You know, why does anyone need to own more than one golf club? So I understand why. I don't care, but at least I understand why. So I'm apply that same concept to the mental health professionals.
No. Clover, you got anything you want to bring up or ask?
Yeah, actually, I do, since we're talking about these. You know, now, this is an extended, you said it was a, what was the word?
Continuing education.
Right. For those that are already in the mental health field, I'm guessing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So basically, to explain that to anyone who's listening right now, like I took a Safe Talk suicide course a couple weeks ago, and they actually gave me a certificate that gave me credit for actually taking the course and learning. Now, so if I was a mental health professional, which they're required to every year, continue their education, it's almost like someone who's a trainer in our world who has to continue to qualify or learn more or whatever, you know, same concept. So it's encouraging people to come into our world and understand why, actually shoot a gun. You know, I was talking today on my own podcast to Tracy Guns about having someone come into this world and not feel intimidated. No stupid questions, right? Understanding the basics of guns. For you guys would be bored out of your mind in this course. Like you would be, just from the standpoint of, you know, we're going to really make it basic, but we're going to introduce people. And who knows, man, maybe some of these therapists will pick up a new hobby as Pirelli did and his wife in that book, Behavioral Science, right? Of firearms and mental health. I think it's a great thing. And I think that I know the idea is to get past this first one. And then Jake, we're going to talk about phase two of this program, you know, where you can kind of graduate through this course and come back. But I really do feel like in the future, we can have this be a nationwide thing where people can go to get continuing education credit for their profession and come into our world. And who knows, but, you know, you go in and you learn about firearms. You get to hear stories from Rob and I. You get to hear I'm going to be insanely honest about me faking my way through shooting when I first got started, my ego and everything like that, because I think that's important. You know, I was forced to, but I was my first time shooting a gun. I pretty much was freaking out, but you would have never been able to tell. Right. But my hands are shaking. All these things. These are acceptable things to talk about. You know, in our own culture, we're all badasses at this point, you know, or, you know, no one sits there and is like, I suck at this. And I think that can be intimidating for people outside of the culture.
Yeah.
Now, has there been any consideration to flipping that training around to where there's some mental health awareness or training for gun people available that's out there? Sort of like the little thing, the suicide awareness thing you talked about that you were able to take. Is there any thoughts on extending that maybe with the WTTA side or something where people can go in and there's actually little courses on that type of stuff?
I'm glad you said that because it's a good segue into the Safe Talk thing that I did. One of the things I was really impressed with, and I kind of wish it got more attention, was I signed up for the Safe Talk course and just showed up, and there was two different gun stores from in Nevada that Richard Egan, who's with Nevada Coalition for Suicide Prevention, many of you met him working the Walk the Talk America booth at SHOT Show.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So he threw that, and there were two ranges that were there, and their employees were there. Like each of them had like five employees there. So there are programs. We kind of got to bring them to the forefront, and you kind of just gave me an idea there. Maybe I need to start kind of posting about that stuff to let people know that Safe Talk is there and ranges and stores. And I applauded both those stores to actually send that they're sending their people there. But yeah, it's a great idea. It's just,
well, And we're also about to launch a program as part of our storage facility program with Ranges, where we want the Ranges to send all their employees through a distance education piece. So we worked with Mental Health America over the last, you know, 6-8 months to develop the script for that, online testing. People will get certificates, all of that stuff, too, as under Walk the Talk America. So that's, you know, in conjunction with where we're trying to get the Ranges. It's like Hold My Guns is doing a similar thing. The details of which are, I'm sure, overlapping at like 97%. But we're going to be offering an educational program so that it's not just, you know, yeah, we'll hold your guns, but also giving some of those employees a little bit more knowledge about how to handle the conversation. The other thing that's important is there are a lot of suicides that happen with rented guns or with freshly purchased guns or at gun ranges where people can go in and just, you know, buy a box of ammo, go out on the range. And a lot of different policies are put into place. You know, you got to have somebody with you, or, you know, the first time you have to have someone with you, especially if you're renting a gun. What we want to do is kind of get beyond that to make it a little bit more sophisticated in terms of, you know, a more subjective process for the employees. But the other big thing about it for a range employee, especially, is trauma mitigation. We want to educate people about the fact that there are negative outcomes. There are bad things that can happen to you or that you could witness if you work at that gun range, if you work in the firearms industry. Circle back to the PD-10. If I'm not comfortable with the fact that that gun's going to show up in a crime scene, that if we sell 5, 10, 15, 20, 100,000 of guns with my logo on it, that some negligent parent isn't going to leave that gun in a purse where a kid can get to it and the kid's going to hurt himself with it. A gun's going to be used maybe to kill a cop, right? I mean, I know there's going to be a 100,000 great things that come from that gun. People smiling, kids taking their first shots with it, people defending their family with it, cops using it on or off duty. But those negative things are there too. And if I was blind to that, then the day it happened or the day I saw that video or I saw that photograph, I could be more further traumatized because I wasn't, you know, sort of acclimated to at least the idea of it, right? And I didn't accept it. So part of the educational process for range employees and for anybody in the shooting community is to accept that these things can happen. And that, I think, makes people more likely to try to avoid them because they're not in denial mode, right? And that's a big part of this conversation we're going to have with the mental health professionals this week in Reno also. And Reno Guns and Range, where I teach, we've got a great relationship with them. They've got a bunch of our ICE trained and certified instructors there. They've agreed to host this event. I think they're going to continue to host these because one of the things that we want the mental health professionals to know is that people inside of the gun community take this very seriously. We take the responsibility of firearms ownership seriously, and that there are leaders inside of the community trying to educate around what happens when we're negligent, when we're irresponsible, or when we're uneducated about the mental health issues. So that's a big part of this, too. It really is a two-way kind of seminar for that reason.
Yeah. And, you know, Sarah's made a couple of points out there that she loves the idea of this continued education, get a certificate, because she said a lot of these mental health professionals, they love certificates because it's a status symbol. But if you're giving them a certificate that has to do with firearms, that might be a certificate that they've never heard of. They say, well, I want to go check this out. So I think that's a really cool thing. She also said she likes the idea of them being able to ask questions without feeling like they're going to be ostracized by their peers and all that. So that's a welcoming environment is always a positive thing. Let's see here. I'm trying to see there is. Oh, G-Webs out there wanted to ask you guys, are you working? I think it's called Dr. Go, Doctors for Responsible Gun Ownership. Have you guys worked with them at all?
In the past, I've interacted with them through just, you know, general gun rights advocacy, but I don't think we have any overlap right now program wise with WTTA. But if you're listening, Doctors for Responsible Gun Ownership, give us a call.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll talk to anybody. One of the things that's tough is, and I get this a lot, and I think everyone means well, right, is they always try to throw me with somebody. But it's like, hey, listen, you need to talk to this guy. And it's like, okay, what to tell him what I'm doing? I've had some awkward conversations where someone has insisted that I talk to somebody, and I talk to that person, and I feel like I'm wasting their time. Like, they're just like, and what would you like from me? And I'm like, I want you to kill your friend that told me to call you. it is one of the things that we'll talk to anybody. And I assume as this little tour kicks off that I'm going to Santa Fe with Debbie and meeting professionals. And then Rob and I have a bunch of different things that we're going to be appearing at. I assume that some of these conversations will get going. It's hard being on the road, meeting people, or actually executing on your plans and your policies. You got to find a balance, right? It's the same thing with business, right? It's one funny little anecdote about what we're doing here is I'm speaking in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Rob and I are doing this thing in Reno, which is continuing education. I went most of my whole life without having a resume. And a lot of these things require you to have a resume. So it was crazy because they're like, hey, you just send over your resume. And I would always kind of skate that. I'm like, send over everything else they request. And they're like, yeah, we're missing your resume, man. I'm like, I don't really have one. I mean, unless you want to, I could tell you that I worked at Applebee's. You
know, I'd say that, the movie Zoolander was based loosely off of my life.
No, but like you, when you don't, I'm telling you, I'm a very lucky person. I'm not complaining at all, but nepotism is a wonderful thing, especially when you go into corporate world. So I just didn't have that. And it was funny watching me try to put this thing together. Like the analogy would be like a baby deer on ice where I'm just riding it and I'm sending it to friends and peers that I trust. And they're like, this is awful, man. Take that out. Nobody cares that you were an Applebee's waiter and when you're 18.
So for the last 25 years, you've owned a gun company. What's that? I'm sure that's the first thing that happens. So what's that all about? What's that like? It is what it is.
I tell them it's just like Lord of War. Only cooler.
There you go. Why wouldn't you? Well, I wanted to kind of bring something up because if you guys are out there and you're wanting to find more about Walk the Talk, it's WTTA.org. They're on Facebook. They're on Instagram. They're everywhere. You probably, if you see a lot of people within the gun community and as far as maybe the industry and the social media guy, you probably see a bunch of these. And, I would like to see more people. I'm sure we've all got them on, but I'd like to see a lot more people wearing their bracelets and don't be afraid to take a picture of it and say, hey, I'm supporting my WTTA bracelet today because I want to bring mental health, especially in our community out there. It's not a scary thing. It's not something, like you said, we're trying to get away from the stigma of having a scarlet letter. And there are a lot of people within our community that struggle with it, whether it's veterans or, people think that mental health is just either schizophrenia or it's bipolar or it's PTSD. But there's so many other things and it can happen overnight. I was talking with Sarah yesterday on the phone for a long time and talking about friends of ours that literally within an hour or two, their life changed. And for whatever happened to them, something happened to one of their friends, and that put them down a mental spiral. And there's people that we all love that we know they're not evil people. We know they're not bad people. They're just going through a tough time, but many of them are afraid to say, I need help. And I want to say thank you to Mike and to Rob for all that you're doing. And you don't understand how nice it is and refreshing it is to hear some people take a stance on something that has been kind of pushed to the shadows, if you want to call it that, to bring that to the front line. And I hope more people get out there. Please support them. Monetarily support them. Support them like Clover. Clover, I'll bring you in, but Clover went to his local gun shop and did something cool. Do you want to talk about that real quick? It can be something. Two
of them. Now. So, yeah, I mean, everybody can do their part. The flyers, the insert, I call them the flyers, but the inserts, they're available on the WTTA site. You can go, you can click, you can download them, you can print them. I mean, if you can find maybe you can find a local printer to actually donate that and do a few hundred for you or something like that. If you can't, I mean that, ink's not terribly expensive to print some off or whatever. And maybe the gun shop's willing to, but go to the gun shop. I know that, I know Mike's working hard to get gun companies to put them in the box, but when he was talking about that and he's like, well, I'm trying to bring more companies on board. I had the thought, I'm like, well, while he's jacking around with these gun companies, trying to get them on board with something that should be blatantly obvious they need to be doing, why can't we approach the actual gun shops and say, hey, when you sell a new firearm, would you mind sliding one of these in the box? You know, because they're going to get it in. They're going to open the box. They're going to log it into their books. They're going to do all that stuff. They have the opportunity at that point to slide one of those cards or pieces of paper, have you printed out.
It doesn't cost them a dime.
And I've approached two shops so far, totally on board, had no problem. Now, I did offer to give them, I think 100 copies a piece. And I asked beforehand about how many new guns do they sell a month. So, you know, that 100 a piece covered them for several months. And I told them, hey, if you need more, let me know. And at both times they told me, both places rather, they told me this, and we'll just use one and make copies of it. So they were willing, you know, I made it very easy for them to get started, and then hopefully they continue to do it.
Yeah.
Thank you for that, by the way, man. That was awesome.
No, yeah, that's awesome. And I kind of followed his lead, and I have my local gun shop. I sent, I think I gave him like 50 of them to start with. I said, look, anytime you need more. And what they're also going to do is they're going to put a stack of them on the counter as well, which I think is not just buying a gun, but put them on the counter so people that may just be window shopping for guns, but they might see that and ask a question, because that initial question is sometimes all it takes to start a life-changing conversation with someone. So, you know, I want to bring Rob and Mike both in and talk about either Avidity or Walk Talk or whatever else you got going on. Mike, I'll bring you in first. Anything that you want to plug, or where can people reach you?
They can reach me through social media. I pretty much am not traveling for a while. I'm going to Reno to see Rob, and I don't do anything for about a month, you know, next month. So if anyone wants to talk to me, reach out. You know, you can do it through the Walk the Talk social medias, which is Walk the Talk US, or just my personal ones at Michael David Sedini, however you want to get to me. I there's not anybody I won't talk to. So
there you go. Before I bring Rob in and let him talk, there's a question out here for you. One of the viewers says, hey, Rob, do you have a discount code for Crossbreed holsters? He's buying one for his Evo.
No, you know what? I don't. I should. Seems like I might. I think I saw a sale thing, though. So I'll tell you what. Do this. I'm going to, sometime this evening, go back through social media. And if that was just an announcement, then it's just an announcement. If I can find a sale, I'm going to promote it. I'll put it out on my Instagram, on Twitter, on Facebook, and I'll put it out there if I can find any sale going on right now on that holster. I'll do that for sure.
There you go. Now, getting back to the real point is, I know that you wear 27,000 different hats, and I know that I'm glad I caught you in transition from point A to point B. It might be a good thing to just kind of give you a break on driving or whatever, but can I tell people all the crap that you're doing is unbelievable. But I don't think people understand the realm of what you're doing, but can I tell people what you're doing, where they can reach you, where they can you know, follow you or whatever?
When I was driving today, I was bored for a minute. Back when I was being a hermit and not talking to people for 20 minutes, I was like, oh, let me update my profile picture on one of my Facebook pages. And then I didn't really know what to put in the caption. So I just listed like websites where people can find me. So it was like, you can go to Personal Defense Network. You can go to robpinkus.com. You can go to WTTA.org. You can go to 2AO.org. You can go to SaveThe2A.org. You can go to Endeavor DCF. That's my gym and defensive unarmed and firearms training center in Ohio that I'm a part owner of. You can go to SDI.edu because I'm on the advisory board for Sonoran Desert Institute. I'm sure I'm forgetting a couple of things.
No, you could say his name three times in the mirror, and he just shows up behind you. That happened to the NRA.
Oh, AvidityArms.com. Yeah, so I'm kind of all over the place, but you know, kind of the same thing. I always tell, like, I had a guy today. I got a voicemail. So apparently I have a phone number for ICE Training Company. I don't know what it is. I know that like Barrett uses it to communicate with ranges and some of the hosts and when he's like doing the work stuff. I have no idea what that number is. I would never give it out to anybody. I certainly don't answer it. But Barrett forwarded me a voicemail to that number.
And it was some guy from Wisconsin who was in his 70s, and his message was pretty simple. He's like, Rob, I understand that you are as concerned as I am about what's going on at the NRA, and I'm a lifetime endowment member, and I want to talk to you about my concerns. And, you know, if you listen, go back and listen to the second episode of the Mike Sedini podcast that we talked about what happened, like, at the end of an NRA show one day when some guy walked up to us and he's like, hey, young fellers, I want to talk to you about something. And so that always has the chance of going sideways. But in this case, I was like, you know what? I'm driving. I punched the guy up, and the guy said he had contacted, like, I don't know, some dozens of NRA board of directors members, other people that he thought were leaders in the industry. And the guy's like, I don't use Facebook. I don't do social media. You know, I can send an email. I went to your website. I found this number. No one else has called me back, but I'm concerned. I want to know what we can do. So, I mean, so like when Mike says, like, he'll talk to anybody, I'm not really a hermit that drives around and won't talk to people. That's what I want to do. So, you know, call me. I mean, I do give out my cell phone number a ton of different times and, you know, hey, send me a text or whatever. And sometimes I'll see an unknown number come up and I won't answer it. Come in the middle of 20 things, but I hit my little auto reply and the auto reply says, hey, I don't recognize your number. Send me a text, send me an email. Let me know what's going on. But if somebody calls back two or three times, eventually I end up talking to them. I don't see any point in wearing like all those hats that I do and raising my hand. It's like some of the NRA directors right now, right? I don't want to go too far off on that tangent, but they're avoiding the conversation, right? Or they're saying like, well, I only care about the shooting sports, or I only care about hunting issues and making sure NRA members have hunting land. So I'm not going to talk about all these other things. No way. The reason I was actually late getting on the call with you guys, the reason I was late to the podcast, it was a guy that he made a comment online, and I know him. I reached out to him. I said, hey, dude, give me a call when you get a chance because I want to understand what you're saying. And the guy came down to me, well, I don't want to get any mud on me. I don't want to get down in the mud. Bro, get in the mud or get on the sidelines and stay out of my way. But don't show up in the comment section if you're not really willing to put thought into this, because there are friendships being strained. There are people who, to them, the NRA is like apple pie in America and their mom and the army and everything else. But right now there's some bad actors and there's some bad situations that need to get cleaned up. And if you're not willing to get into that conversation, then cool, sit on the sidelines, send in some money to save2a.org, sign our petition. Maybe no, go the other way, put a bunch of money into the NRA and hope that somehow that's going to be influential. But don't show up in the comments if you're not really willing to have a conversation. And I think Mike would agree with me. That's what we're probably most passionate about, is agree with us or disagree with us. Don't really care about the starting point. We care about the evolution to understanding, and that's going to require a discussion or dialogue. So find me on one of those websites. Find me on Instagram. You go to my MySpace. I got a cool picture of me on a horse with a flag. You'll recognize me.
Is it like a Putin picture, like bearless on the bareback horse? I mean,
no, I've got that. You have to dig through my photos. I was a couple years ago, and I did like the horse, you know, the shirtless on the horse kind of thing. It was nice. It was pretty. But you can't find that.
That's a different account. Yeah.
Different account.
Yeah. Clover, what you got? You want to tell us where you can find you?
I have to know where that picture of Rob is. It's on eharmony.com. I've seen it.
I thought it was Farmers Only.
That would work.
That could be. No, man, it's been great. It's always fun talking with Mike and Rob. I enjoy it. And we covered a lot of good stuff. So get out. I'm going to pimp WTTA and say get out there, get on the site, learn all you can, talk to people locally, the gun shops locally, all that good stuff. As far as me, clovertac.com, you can find all the social media links there. That's the easiest way to do it. And, don't forget the Wednesday and Friday podcasts. Thanks for the invite. Yeah.
And we'll thanks for coming on, and we can't say it enough. WTTA, it's amazing. It's over a year old now, and I think Mike and Rob will both say they've got to be very, very happy and pleased at the status of where they are right now with it. But they're always going to need more supporters, going to need more money. They're going to need more soldiers out there doing more things. So just because you cannot financially provide support to something doesn't mean you can't help support that cause. So get a hold of them. If you're out there and you think that you need help, it's okay to say you need help. WTTA.org. There is a mental health screening for free. It's anonymous. Please go take it. If you feel like something's wrong, do not be embarrassed or too much of an ego to seek help. The last thing that we need, whether you're a firearms person, I don't care. You're a brother and sister in this world with us. And if you need help, someone out there is there to help you. If you need to find someone in your area, WTTA, other places have different resources that can help you find someone that will get you help. If you're a veteran out there and you want to get a hold of Rob or Mike and you don't know how to get a hold of them, call me, get a hold of me. I'll put you in touch with them. I know that's something that's important to me. Everyone's important, but the veteran side, you guys understand that many veterans are exploited. They are utilized to fight a terrible war, and when they get home, they become a number. And some of the VA should be absolutely just blown up and start over. The VA process absolutely has no regard for the veterans' needs. If you don't have something documented in their jacket, they cannot get anything for it afterwards. But if they do document it in their jacket before they get out, their career is over. Guys, if you're veterans out there and you're having trouble with the VA or anything else, mental health, PTSD, please, please, please do not think that you're less of a man or less of a woman for asking for help. This is incredibly important. It's a societal thing. It's not just a gun thing. It is it's a human thing. So please, please, please get a hold of someone. If you need any help, I'm here to talk with you. Any one of these four guys, if you get a hold of us, no matter 24/7, if you need help, call us. We will talk to you. We will make sure that you get help somehow, some way. Do not hesitate to call any of us. Guys, if you are watching or listening in replay or on podcast side, thank you so much. If you have questions for Clover or Rob or Mike, please use the comment section below. We will make sure they get those questions to them and see if we can get those answered for you. Most importantly, go check out all of their projects, Avidity Arms, Walk the Talk America, Personal Defense Network. I mean, the list goes on. 2A Org, Save the 2A. All of these things are phenomenal that these guys are involved in. Most importantly, just get involved somehow, some way. And we will see you soon. Thank you for watching and listening. Semper Fi.